Step right up, little lady. Why don't you come over here and win a prize?
I am recording.
The prize that you will win will
twin. Now we are recording.
Doing your what is that?
Every day we love recording. Yeah. It's the thing that we do for us.
This, I know you're not doing that, but this reminds me of that video you and I once made when you did your impression of like a evangelical preacher and I played organ.
Dude, that was great. That organ work was some of the finest.
We all done sinned in our life.
Yeah, I brought the 12 Steps to Jesus program back.
Oh, it was brilliant. Do you remember when we did it again at the International Affairs University and we took it to the level that you were like tapping people on their foreheads, trying to get them to pass out with the power?
Fire upon you. No, I don't remember that, but
we don't
that
have that one.
Like
we don't have that one on video. I think that was right before Cecil Samuelson begrudgingly came and met us. It was great.
I feel like at some point in my career, I'm going to have a Paula Deen moment where some video from back in the day is going to be like, and here's Al pretending to be a Baptist preacher.
Exactly.
I'll be like, no,
it's going to
no, guys, that was before I knew the Baptist preachers, and it was all just jokes.
When they're considering you to be a stake president someday and they're doing oppositional research, that's the kind of thing that's going to surface.
When I'm getting vetted, the file on me is just going to be this monstrous sum of social media. They'll be like, can you explain this? What do you call it? A tree dance? Can you explain that to me?
The tree dance is
like, sir, I have no explanation. I'm sorry.
The tree dance should always happen. I love the tree dance. I had a buddy of mine. Some of you might have heard it. Alan Mount. He once substituted here on the show one time when Al.
His name is Alan Mount?
Yeah. He's your He's very much.
You can't just brush past a name like Mount, Jeff. How many great innuendos are there for?
Oh, I know.
Alan Mount.
Oh, I know. We were mission buddies. We know. He's also He's also as tall as you, Al. You guys could have good times together. Gentle giant.
So a lot of mounting in your companionship.
Yeah. Well,
yes,
we were not companions.
I
was his zone leader, and he was my subordinate. So take that as you will. But
so were you the mountee or the mounter? In that relationship,
usually the mounter, because I could run into his arms and it was wonderful. But if any of you remember, Alan years ago subbed on the podcast once when Al was out of town, helped us out a little bit. He's a friend of mine. So he was on Keith Olbermann's show last night as one of Keith Olbermann's worst persons in the world.
What?
Olbermann is broadcasting about sports again. You know, he's all back on that stuff. And one of his worst persons in the world, he just says, a guy who identifies himself as Alan Mount in Surprise, Arizona. So he was at a spring training game in Arizona. The footage shows him running to get a home run, and he just knocks over this like 7-year-old girl, just plows into her trying to get the ball. And the best thing is the video they showed was Alan took his own video of it while watching it on TV. And put it on and put it on YouTube. So you hear him laughing like, that was awesome. Like, that's your video, buddy. And then it goes back to Olbermann, who is like not amused by this guy taking out a 7-year-old girl in any way.
Wait, where's the link to that? Do you have it?
I could find it for you somewhere if I dig around. Let me see if I can.
I must see this.
You must have to talk a little bit. Maybe I can bring it up. I don't want to waste our.
Hold on. I'm looking. There's one from 2009.
Do you want Olbermann?
First, we're against anything Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow, just because I think both are ridiculous.
Hold on. Countdown with Keith Olbermann got me through my final year at BYU. I will say that.
Oh, my gosh. Jeff,
in a world where we were dealing with the Bush-Rumsfeld era, I needed a voice of sanity.
Keith Olbermann and Kevin Barney are identical in my mind.
Cowards.
Both cowardly, shivering men with no backbones.
I think Al needs to have a Keith Olbermann-esque, you know, opinion, quote-unquote, news program.
Yeah, he needs a rebuttal. Yeah, for sure.
You should write one. Do you want a link of the girl being taken out, or do you want the link of Keith Olbermann ripping into it? Let me see what I can find.
Oh, either way. Honestly, either way.
I'll post both of these on our website. I mean, no one really probably remembers Alan because he subbed during our first year when we only had, you know, like 150 listeners at a time.
But yes.
Now we're hardcore. So that happened.
All right, hold on. It's 19 seconds.
Okay,
there he goes.
I'll just sit here.
Oh, the Royals are playing.
They're going to be okay this year, actually. Kent Larson, what do you think? Royals, good this year, bad? Tell us.
He killed that poor woman.
I know. It's this little kid standing right where the ball was coming, and he comes flying in from some other part of the outfield. You got to get that ball.
You got to get it.
Because you got to have it.
Never got to get it.
Because you
got to
have it. So, anyways, that story was yesterday, and I thought it was funny, and I just...
That is very funny.
I just
good for you,
Alan. I just wanted to share. But how is the...
Is he a faithful listener of the show?
No, probably not. He does some podcasting, though. He does video game podcasting.
Oh yeah, no, I remember.
There's an audience for that, apparently.
Yes, I remember.
There's an audience for everything. The audience for video games is likely larger than our audience. But I'm okay with it.
I see.
I'm okay with it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, how's your life? I don't know where you were in Missouri. You're in New York. You're in Toronto. And,
yeah,
and they don't have internet in Canada.
I went Missouri to New York, where I ate my numpang, had some Shake Shack.
Oh, these are all good calls.
Magnolia's Bakery. I mean, I had a lot of food, Jeff. I went and there were some Italians that were friends of the guy I was staying with that made us an Italian dinner.
Yeah. Oh, I saw this on Instagram.
You should never say yes to an Italian dinner at 11:30 at night.
No.
That stuff will keep you up all night, young man.
Yes.
So did that. That was actually a really good time. I enjoyed my New York stay. It's been like 5 years since I've been up there, so I got to call a bunch of old buddies and try and connect.
That's not true. It has been only a few years since you were there.
When was I there last?
I don't know. I'm sure you visited, but when you lived there was 3 years ago.
2011.
Yeah. Because that was my first time going to New York, which I did not do.
No, so that was the last. That was the last time I'd been up there. I have not visited.
Well, I'm glad it was marvelous. I'm glad you had a terrific time.
Yeah, it was good. And then I shot up to Toronto, up in Hamilton area for a little bit.
Yeah, word.
Went and got wings one night and just pretty much,
you
I mean, it's all work. My life only seems glamorous because of my airport check-ins, Jeff. If you looked at what was between the airport check-ins, it's as lame as your life. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't feel like I'm ahead at all.
This is me, Mormon, flipping you off.
That half a knuckle?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I do. I'll do this one. Oh, okay, see what I did? My ring finger. Isn't it funny?
Jeff.
Isn't it funny how...
Jeff, do you realize the imagery that you are trying to convey to me?
It is true. Isn't it funny how arbitrary imagery is, though? It's like I put up my ring finger at you, and of course we know what I'm trying to convey, but not really conveying it, so it carries less offense. Whereas I actually don't dare flip you the bird, because I feel like that would be over the line and legitimately offensive. Imagery is so arbitrary.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not going to flip you the bird. I'm doing you the fake bird. I don't flip the bird. I'm not a bird flipper.
I feel like your bird just needs... I feel like that bird needs some wings on it. Just some, maybe put some wings on the bird. That's more of a bird. Maybe? No? How was your week, Jeff? I've missed you terribly. Sorry we had to record so late. It was just the way that it goes when I forget to bring my recording stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How was your week, young child? Jeff, can you not hear me? Hey.
Why is it silent?
Hey.
Alan, are you alive?
Can you hear me, Jeff?
Yes.
I'm here.
Why do you do this?
Oh, you can
hear
me now?
Are we lagging again?
I think we're all right. I think we came through it together like a family.
Stop using the Chromecast while we're talking. You're sucking up your bandwidth.
All right, Chromecast is off.
Yeah, it's over. So we had a regional state conference this weekend. I'm sure you've had those before.
Wait, is this where you're telling me how you did? Because that's what I'm most curious about.
How I did at what, state conference? I did not win.
No, how your week was.
Well, the other parts were fine. I mean, the week itself was great. I've been very busy. I've been working on. I imagine I can discuss this publicly, but I've been working on the Foreign Service procurement process, and takes up a lot.
Jeff wants to be
a diplomat,
the same as that Shirley Temple lady as she passed away. Exactly. An ambassador.
Yeah, that's the one. But it's a lengthy process, and I had a big deadline coming up throughout this week. So I was very busy with that and other things. But a big thing, of course, Saturday, we go to steak conference. It's the evening session. In my steak, previously, we just got a new steak president. Those evening sessions would be maybe 75 minutes. Short and sweet, right? You know,
hour and 15 minutes. That's what you're willing to give to Jesus.
I'm willing to give whatever's needed, but hour 15 is an okay time. This meeting instead, I think, was a little overambitious because one, it was the first one really planned by the stake presidency. Two, we were having a broadcast from Salt Lake, so the Sunday meeting couldn't have 2 hours of local speakers. And in the end, we had a meeting that it was like a quarter till or 10 till. We're an hour and 45 minutes in. And they get up and say, all right, well, now we'll hear from so-and-so, afterward followed by so-and-so, then a special musical number, and then President so-and-so will talk to us. Afterwards, stake president will give his closing remarks. And we're just like, oh, my goodness. This is...
Wait, you went... It was a three-hour session?
The sad thing was, because everything else went so long, the counselor in the stake presidency and then the stake president really shortened their remarks. I could tell the stake president was going to do a whole PowerPoint because he had the projector ready to go. He just skipped it and just said, you know, hey, whatever you are, be a good one. Have a nice night. He knew we had to get out of there. So I felt gypped in that sense.
Just quoted Abraham Lincoln.
Because those talks were probably good. We counted. There were 10 scheduled talks for this meeting, plus 2 special musical numbers.
How did they not think that was going to go over?
I don't know. This happens. I'm not, you know, it's whatever. But it was a... It was a dragged out meeting. When they made that announcement that we still had 4 speakers left, I was like, I'm going to the restroom. I can't sit here.
Wait, were you edified or did you excuse yourself from any uplifting moment because of how
no.
annoyed you were that they dared feed you more than you were ready
for? I wasn't that annoyed. I was edified. I do think, yeah, they could have had fewer speakers. And also the theme of the meeting was clearly supposed to be hastening the work. But we had at least 3 talks that had nothing to do with that. So I spent the first hour wondering what the theme really was of this conference. And then it all kind of started to focus in on missionary work. And I was like, well, that's great. I don't know why we had the woman from primary talk for a while then, but good for her. Glad she was here. It was great.
Whoa, that's sexist, Jeff.
Is it?
You can't say that. You can't say woman from primary.
Sorry. That human from the primary presidency. That individual.
Yeah, thank you.
Gender neutral. So it was, but it was good. It was fine. Then in our Sunday meeting,
gender agnostic.
Our Sunday meeting was fine. I don't know how big the region was. Those of you who listen to us in the Southeast United States, if you also had this meeting, I'd like to know because we were clearly grouped in with, hi, Saints in the Southeast U.S. I mean, I'm in Virginia, but Northern Virginia, D.C. suburbs is not really the same as Richmond or anywhere else. It's a different...
You're the most ungrateful recipient of a Salt Lake broadcast, maybe of all time.
I don't love the broadcast. They're impersonal. They're strange. But the broadcast was good. And then our stake president...
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the broadcast either. I don't feel like those are helping anybody.
I'd be fine.
I feel like if you need more 70s to be able to go and be with the Saints, get more 70s.
Which is a fair
point. Give me a few more quorums.
Because the second quorum of the 70 now is down to what? There's like 10 people in it right now. It's really small.
Yeah, the Lord's got some calling to do. You know what I'm saying?
There it is. I find that it's always good to tell the Lord how things should be. And then mask that by saying, well, I'm just encouraging the prophet to ask.
All right, a veiled reference towards...
reference nothing. I merely speak simple truth.
Precursoring future stories. Anyway, we got some Mormon simple stuff truth. Going on this week.
State conference was a Mormon thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Alan, I also ate Cafe Rio last night after going to the temple. I fulfilled a Mormon cliche that I had yet to do in my life.
Hold on. Let me see if I could care any less before we go.
It was, as you would say, tremendous.
Least I could possibly care.
I had this salad.
I could not care any less.
They make this pork with Dr. Pepper in it. It's something else.
It is nothing else, Jeff. It is stupid.
Why are you so hurtful?
Silly.
Why do you hurt me?
Because it's just like sugary pork. Why does anybody like that place? It's awful.
Says the man who had so much catering done by them that we ate there for free last time I was in Utah with
him. It was one like $1,500 meal, and you get you get a free meal every $100. So I was eating like a king. It was all I could
eat. We were living the dream. It was a good time. But we do have more Mormon news. A lot of things have happened since we last broadcast.
Yeah, a whole lot. First, we need to take a minute. There was a missionary that passed away in Guam this last week.
Yeah,
from Layton, Utah. It was kind of what is that on the year? Three?
I think that's only two on the year.
Well, Elder Miller Toa passed away. He was serving in Guam. Seemed like a very happy dude. Dude, it's just crummy. Apparently he was, I think he was climbing a tree and fell out of it.
Yeah, they were doing a service project.
Skubanov, I remember in Ukraine one time, there was an elder that was they were trying to surf down slides, the old Soviet slides, and he fell and got severely injured and had to go home or something to that effect. And it was, stuff like that where there's just no rhyme or reason to it. It's just crummy. So very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's sad. So have your thoughts be with their family. I mean, doing good work, but it's sad.
Yeah, it's crummy.
Why do they keep dying? I just don't.
I don't get it either. I do not know. Anyway.
I don't know. Another missionary thing, though, just so everyone knows. So out in Venezuela, as all many of you know, there's been a great deal of political turmoil going on in the country right now. A lot of stuff happening. So in response to this, as we've seen elsewhere when this happens, missionaries now who are not citizens of Venezuela are being transferred out of the country. You might remember many years ago, Americans stopped going to Venezuela. That pretty much coincided with the Chavez regime being unfriendly towards the U.S. But other South Americans have been there for a long time. But now it will be just Venezuelans. And there are still 500 Venezuelan missionaries in the country. 500 missionaries in the country. There were not 500 missionaries in my country on my mission.
That's impressive. Well, yeah, and I mean, I think we talked about this in Ukraine last week, but all the missionaries from the Crimea have been pulled out. So where where Russia's taken over, they've all been moved to other areas.
No, but did you hear? No. This is actually an update. They've actually been transferred out to different missions now.
Wait, the ones from the Crimea? A lot of the
Crimean ones have been sent completely out of the country.
Really? Yeah. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, what makes even less sense is Russian foreign policy, but that's a whole other podcast.
Ha-ha!
So
yeah, when I was in New York, I saw a pro-Ukraine protest where they were drawing a lot of analogies to Putin and Hitler. I thought it was clever, though.
A lot of that's
relatively ineffective.
A lot of talk, but what else can you do? It's just, it's been crazy with that.
Sort of the Ukrainian way is a very passive, let's talk about this and not fight sort of approach to things. And so having somebody that's there with a gun changes their conversation dramatically. It's not something that they are familiar with as a country.
Good article in The Economist that described it as the U.S. is trying to play Monopoly with Putin, but Putin wants to play chess. And so we're not even playing the same game.
All right, that seems a little trite.
No, it was a good illusion. I believe one of the quotes said something like, we're trying to negotiate a trade of, Illinois Avenue for Marvin Gardens, and Putin instead is just taking a weak pawn and using his rook to go for this. It is. It's a different game. It's a mess.
Did you see Mitt Romney's article? I think he did it in the Huffington Post, maybe?
I don't.
Or the Washington Post?
Oh, because he's Mormon. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because he's Mormon. And he just talked about how we needed a leader like Mitt.
No, whatever.
Did you notice that?
No. I didn't see that.
I appreciated it. I'm on his side.
Imagine being a missionary in one of these affected countries. I mean, goodness, missions have all kinds of things, but imagine you're a missionary in Venezuela or you're a missionary in Crimea, and all of a sudden you're in Crimea and Russian troops start helicoptering in to the area, and you're just like,
Then all the secret, man, you had in the area book all the secret procedures. I wonder if the missionaries in the Crimea got the code to pack the books and ship the books. That was the code.
Next thing you know, the Russians, probably took them out because the Russians are going to be like, those missionaries are American spies. We can prove it.
It was true, man. But we would look at things.
I can't imagine going
as American.
I knew some missionaries who were emergency transferred, but just within our mission, they needed to get out of the area, and even that was a big. That was a big deal, you know. That's some stuff going down when that happens usually, but just closing up shop on an entire
to do.
That's like an entire region. I mean, Catalonia was in my mission. What if it got violent when they try to leave Spain?
Well, then you call all of your investigators and are just like, well, so we'll be back maybe in a few years.
So the members are going to take care of you now. Yeah, they're going to be member missionaries. So have fun with that. I don't even know how many units we have in Crimea. I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah, it wasn't your mission.
Let's see. There was another article in the Rational Faiths. Jeff has been enjoying this blog immensely. We have two articles from them. Rational Faiths, keeping Mormonism weird is their tagline. There's an article called "I Apostate."
Oh, this. So this was
essentially
this was written for you.
Yeah. That's fair. Which Jeff and I were interested to talk about this just because he touches on a topic that a lot of us are familiar with, where because he sort of questions some of his, you know, what everybody else just sort of accepts, and he's like working through and digesting Mormonism in addition to everything else that's out there.
Yeah.
Somebody at church mentioned that they thought he was apostate, right? That they were like, well, you know, you can ask this guy, but he's an apostate because he like went and saw the Book of Mormon musical, or he, I mean, I don't know. I feel like we are often kind of put in that silo where if you're not the way that everybody remembers Mormonism from the 80s, then we are apostate. We're doing it wrong somehow. But Jeff and I mean, we're big proponents of the idea that you can be good, solid, faithful Mormons and still struggle with the church's position on gay marriage right now, right? And have a belief maybe that we're not at the end of that conversation and that it's going to continue to evolve. Or, you know, maybe you disagree with the church's stance on immigration, right? Like what we're suggesting is that it's not – the church isn't anymore a church where you have to agree with 100% of everything that everybody in the church says – because it gets really muddy. I mean, we can find contradictions within the leadership of the church, within like apostles that have different views on topics, right? So don't be embarrassed or offended or judge others if they have different views that they're also working through, right?
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you got out of this article?
Yeah, it is. I mean, he goes through his whole article by basically saying, you know, am I an apostate because, and then the things that he believes, trying to drive the point home that these are fair things for someone to believe. Many of them I agree with. Some of them I wouldn't say anyone's apostate, but I would also say that there is a line between, you know, just going along with the church and not thinking about it, you know, and being like very pharisaical about our approach to the gospel. And then there's a line between that and trying to like pick the gospel apart so much that you're trying to have it on your own terms. And you're trying to decide how you think things should be. But by and large, I mean, yeah, I agree with you in that notion. We have to be
– I mean
– go ahead.
I mean, even to the point where like there's the one that stood out to me where he mentioned an article where his impression was that Elder Oak said that church leaders were above criticism for mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if the criticism is true. And then you have Elder Uchtdorf that says leaders in the church have made mistakes. You know, like there's two different trains of thought.
Well, the funny thing though is those are different ideas though. You can say the leaders have made mistakes, but then Elder Oaks can say even if they've made mistakes, they're above criticism for them.
Yeah, don't get caught up criticizing your leaders. Well, and I remember that talk because the mention or the thought is that criticizing your leaders is the first step to apostasy, right?
Yeah,
like criticizing them as you know, like starting to say, well, maybe my bishop isn't really the bishop, right? We have to always keep in mind that the Lord doesn't call perfect men to perfect callings. He calls, you know, dorky 31-year-olds like Jeff and I to go do real meaningful things in the church, and we screw up sometimes and we don't do it right. So be appreciative of that in your leaders. Like, know that your leaders aren't going to be perfect and they're going to make mistakes. So it's not bad to understand that they've made mistakes, but it doesn't do you any good to try to pull them down or to, you know, mount a coup, so to speak, within your ward. Yeah. That's not helping anything.
No, it doesn't help anything.
Which I legitimately have seen happen. I have seen, I've seen like the witch hunt going after a certain bishop or a stake president or somebody that made some mistake along the way. And it's, I mean, it's no good.
Yeah, and I think the hard thing, and of course we're not meaning to only discuss, you know, leadership and everything like that. But yeah, leaders do make mistakes at the general level and at the local level. And I think unless it involves something that would have a legal entanglement, then, you know, you just need to let the leader go through what the leader needs to go through and then work through your own salvation at the same time. Like, obviously, if there's criminal charges involved, take care of that, whatever. But you got to support your leaders. Still support your leaders. Be with them, but recognize that they're human. I think the problem is too often we have developed this mindset that the church is this pure thing where no one has made mistakes and where everything is extremely black and white. Because when we do that, it makes it much easier to explain to people. It's a lot easier to say just this is and this isn't. And it makes it easier for people to make choices. Some things are crystal clear. I agree with President Kimball, for example, when he said there are some decisions you should only make once. And that is a very black and white statement. But if you get up and say, no, I will obey this, period, for all my days, and stick with that, that's a positive decision. Not vacillating between this and that, saying, well, I'll obey that, but, you know, I was reading about this, and I'm thinking about this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and picking parts out of it. I'm not even thinking of any one particular law or example or anything like that.
Sure.
But, we need to be more, we can be nuanced in our approach to the gospel. That doesn't mean that we have to be disobedient, that we have to be kind of kicking against the pricks. You know,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. We need to be, like, the main thing here is that we need to not look at how other people live the gospel and think that because it's not the same as the way that we live it, that they are the ones that are wrong. Or even that we're wrong, right? The gospel is here to help us get back to our Heavenly Father, right? The church exists for the sole purpose of helping us return to our Heavenly Father, having made the covenants we need to make.
Here's what I want to ask.
Everything in the church, everything around the church, all that other stuff is just there as like helpers, right?
Yeah. So. Here's what I want to ask you, though. He says, am I apostate because I recognize... He recognizes, not just believes, recognize that the last revelation published by the LDS Church was received in 1918, or because I can do the math and calculate that for more than the last half of the church's existence, it has been without canonized revelation. Of course, he's referring to section 138 in the Doctrine and Covenants from Joseph F. Smith, all about the redemption of the dead, because that was announced as, hey, saints, I had a vision about this, and I'm going to tell you about it. And that really is the last thing we have on record of president of the church discussing in very plain terms, you know, a revelation came to me, boom. I do go back to President Benson's statement once when he said, just because it's not followed by thus saith the Lord doesn't mean it's not prophetic counsel. That's something I...
Do we not recognize Spencer W. Kimball's revelation on blacks in the priesthood?
I think the difference is, I think this is really semantics. It's just the way these things are worded is not in the sense of, I am the prophet and this has been revealed to me. It's
There is nothing in me that looks at our church and thinks, man, we don't have enough revelation from God coming constantly.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you go to any general conference you go to, there is so much pure doctrine coming in. And I often think of like the president of the church, how his hands must be tied because of how low of a level we as saints live in the gospel,
exactly.
Right? I mean, like Elder Holland, when he got up and gave that conference talk about women, what was it? Like, I just remember he mentioned, like, don't wear flip-flops to church, you girls, and, like, you know, dress nice or something like that. But when he got up and maybe it was pornography to the men or something like that. But he was just like, you know, I would love to get up and give a sermon on the atonement. I've got so much to tell you about the atonement, and it saddens me greatly that I have to spend my time talking about what kind of shoes to wear to church or what kind of clothes are appropriate.
That said, though,
he's like, I want to be over here, but I gotta be focusing on this stuff because we don't have it yet. We're not there.
That said, though, it does make me wonder, and you used a good example. But, like, what is more important, though? I mean, is it important to pick apart someone's dress code or pick apart the teachings of the Savior? I mean, I would think that better understanding the atonement would lead one to dress more modestly or change an attitude or a personality trait. Not saying change this and then we can study Christ. You know?
Sure. Well, what I'm suggesting is that we aren't doing the fundamentals, right? Just like you would, just how teaching, I mean, I could get up and do an incredibly complex math equation on the board and hope that you are inspired to tighten up your algebra skills so that you can follow along with me. But I have a much more realistic chance of succeeding with you getting where I need you to be if I start at the basics and wait until you get that down.
Well, I agree with that, but I don't think that women wearing not wearing flip-flops to church is the basics. I think that's
I don't know.
I think that's not the core of things.
I mean, perhaps there's something to be said for needing to be dressed in a way that I mean, Elder Eyring said that he never went to the Lord. He never went before the Lord for revelation, right? In scripture study without wearing a tie.
Yeah.
I think about that all the time cuz I always go without wearing a tie. But the thought that he was conveying was that, you know, you put yourself in a position where you're prepared to receive revelation and you're expecting it, you're going to receive revelation and you're going to have a much greater chance of listening or hearing that. And so, I mean, they're like we can sit back in our armchair and sort of say, well, you know, it's just little flip-flops and things, but if Elder Holland felt that it was important to address that as an issue and say, this should, you know, you mothers that are trying to teach this and wondering what the standard should be, here it is.
Yeah, sure.
This is where we need to get to. I'm sure there's value to that. And so,
no,
but
there,
like,
is, there is.
I mean, I look at most of our general conferences and it's faith, repentance, baptism, right? Like Holy Ghost. And we touch the four principles of the gospel and that's pretty much where we revolve. I can't remember the last time we got a good second coming talk or, you know, like some of these... some of these other ones that we would love to just sit and mull over and think about and digest, but you know we're not even bothering with the basics.
Yeah,
right
what
now.
What does stress me out is I think is the church has globalized. Inevitably, what happens is we've become much more basics. Not that we should remember the basics because if we've forgotten those things then that's bad and we need to hone them down.
Do you think that's a lot? Do you think that's a lot of why we're where we are is because of the globalization?
They needed
to be able to fit every
when. Inevitably, when the church is broader, the subject matter is also going to be broader, I think. I don't think that means we can't receive great stuff, but yeah, you look back at some of these, even conferences just in the 60s and 70s, and there'd be talks about some of the most awesome nitty-gritty stuff that you would just gobble up today. But now, yeah, everything is just very, very broad, broad strokes, and that's fine because in some ways we're left to figure things out on our own through our own study, as it should be. It's not the prophet's job to just tell us everything that is, you know, and let it be. But yeah, I think it's a tall order.
Speaking of which, right, we have an article that we're going to talk, well, we can talk about it right now, where Elder Bednar expounded on children being sealed to their parents and what that doctrine actually is, right?
Okay.
So it came out in the Ensign this last month, and Jeff and I were both talking about it. We're like, man, where'd this come from? This is great. This is like some good deep dive into doctrine that we don't necessarily understand perfectly. And to kind of preface the article, apparently there was an understanding going around that if your children were sealed to you, then they would be automatically saved.
Yeah.
You know, sort of without, like, no matter what they did or where they went or what happened, they were going to be good because they were sealed, and that sealing was going to be magical. And he just went in and he said, so the title is Faithful Parents and Wayward Children, Sustaining Hope While Overcoming Misunderstanding. And so he's just sort of laying out how that actually works, and that, you know, just because a child is born in the covenant does not give him the license to go be a dork or you know, just essentially leave the church and he would be forced back in. That removes agency.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, a good deep dive into a topic that like, we'd love to hear this in conference, but we probably won't. We'll
no,
see it
we
in
won't.
The Ensign and things.
But
like
I'm
that.
Glad it's in the Ensign, because I feel like even in the Ensign, we don't necessarily get stuff like this. I really appreciate this kind of clarification. This is not something I ever believed either, but I guess this stems from a Joseph Smith quote where he basically said that the eternal ceilings of faithful parents and the divine promises made to them for valiant service.
Right, the king fall at sermon,
would save right. not only themselves but likewise their posterity. They may sheep may wander, blah 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 blah, but eventually they will come back. And so a lot of people have interpreted that to mean, yeah, if y'all you're sealed and your kids are sealed, born sealed to you, then kids are just going to be back there. And I found it funny that a lot of people were trying to find reasons to criticize this article in certain online communities that rhymes with Borman Boris. Yeah.
Oh, Borman Boris. I love
yeah,
that.
Whatever. But I think it's interesting. Why would what's there to criticize in this? They feel like Elder Bednar's laying the kibosh down. I'm like, no, he's just supporting the simple doctrine of works. I've never been under the assumption that I get a free ride just because my parents were sealed or anything like that.
You know what's great about this? So you can look at this and you like I look at this and I say, boom, revelation. Right? Yeah. This you want an example of revelation in the church today? Here's a revelation. This is done. You can turn back around and say, well, no, he's just clarifying doctrine. That's all this is. But that's I can't think of a revelation around the gospel where it wasn't just taking some understanding mm-hmm. and expounding on it, right? I mean, that's what revelation
that's
is.
That's what it is. Revelation comes in many ways. I mean, for all we know, Elder Bednar or the Brethren have received even letters from concerned members who don't understand this doctrine. And it makes one take pause and revisit this and pray about it and think about it and then decide what should be discussed. I mean, of course, a lot of what the brethren receive as revelation comes from what they hear from the saints and what they observe. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
Revelation is not about them just sitting there and just saying, all right, tell me what's up now. Yeah, it's working through the development of the church and the development of the saints. And, you know, you just make little adjustments as you go. And I think we're in the day and age where it's easy to not categorize these things as revelation necessarily because they are seemingly so minor. It's like we want to show up to General Conference every year and expect something of the weight of the perpetual education fund to be announced, you know. But we're so developed now as a church that no, most of the stuff that comes is just minor counsel.
I haven't even been interested in conference since the last Nauvoo Temple announcing. That was the last thing that was.
There was a how about the missionaries being 18? That was a pretty good one. But I think that's the thing. Revelation comes in very various forms. This is a great clarifier. Yes, parents, you are promised greater strength and understanding through a sealing, and that can inevitably help you with a wayward child. And I think that is what Elder Bednar tries to get across in this instance.
Good stuff.
Speaking of revelation, we might as well talk about our good friend Kate Kelly and her friends at Ordain Women.
Okay.
Right?
What's going on with them?
Well, they, of course, we talked about it last week, intended to do the Million Mormon Mom March or whatever and march on Temple
Square. Million Mormon Mamas.
They wanted to go to Temple Square, go to the priesthood session, just like it happened 6 months ago. But Jessica Moody, the random female spokeswoman for the church, I like that they don't ever send Michael Otterson for this stuff. They're like, hey, you're a woman. You should do the talking in this case.
I bet Michael Otterson is so glad he's not sent out to He's like, oh, good.
Honestly, I wonder if they think like, Jessica, you're female. It'll sound better coming from you. I'm just a British guy.
100%. You know that's exactly what went through their head.
So they sent a letter back to Ordain Women. You can actually find the whole text on our website. We'll link to it. Denying them their request, but not just saying we're not going to give you tickets, but also going as far as to say, yeah, so we would appreciate if you demonstrate
in the public
as it
areas.
Were. Yeah, if you demonstrate in the public areas, which in this case is the street, which puts them in the same area as the people who stand in front of Temple Square and burn garments and stuff like that.
I'll be completely honest with you. I would love to have them as demonstrators and not the other crazy guys. That's going to be a much more pleasant demonstration experience.
Oh, yeah. For sure. They'll just stand there. But it's terrible they actually call it they actually have free speech zones. This makes me think of the Iraq War. This is your free speech zone. And you can even find there's an image of it here that shows
what are your thoughts on this? Do you think the church overstepped their bounds? Do you think that they should have dealt with it differently? Like what are you coming at?
Well, not only that, of course, there will also be no photographers allowed on Temple Square. Except I assume other than the church ones who are going to take pictures
the end sign
of families
photographer.
And stuff. Yeah. I don't know if the church overstepped its bounds. because it can do whatever it wants, and it doesn't want the spectacle that it experienced 6 months ago. I guarantee that. I guarantee the church does not like that there are photos out there of 100 women standing in front of the tabernacle being denied entry while men walked in front of them. That's the bad PR the church wants to avoid. But now it looks even weirder, as if they're establishing, you know, free speech zones, things like that, and saying, no, you can't. It's private property. They can do what they want, but it certainly does not reflect as nicely as I think they wanted it to.
Well, why? How else should they have dealt with it?
That I don't know. What are you going to do? Especially when they said
you have a bunch of women that their intent is to make a spectacle, right? Like they want to draw attention to their cause so that people will give it
credence,
give it more. Yeah, they'll pay attention to it, right? So their intent is to go and get those photos, and the church doesn't like, no, we understand that you're trying to do this. Our intent is to give a great meeting for the priesthood brethren. You're welcome to come to the Relief Society meeting the week before, right? They mentioned that. Please, we hope you'll join us there, where that's the hour for you. And then when the men are having their hour, we'd like you to respect that. And so instead of making a spectacle of it, if you need to come and protest, go stand in the areas where protesting is allowed. Right? That's essentially what's going on here. They are there to protest.
Well, sort of, but that's the thing. Members of Ordained Women, supporters of it, are very sensitive to the label of it being a demonstration or a protest, because they're not trying to protest against the church. In their eyes, the way is that they are asking for inclusion. They're not trying to stand there with signs and say picket and demand. They just want to go to a meeting. And they're very sensitive about this being referred to as a protest, which is why it's ruffled a lot of feathers within the Ordained Women movement, because now they feel like they are being grouped in with the people who actually protest against the church.
They absolutely are, and they should be, because there's no, like, and not to say that protesting is wrong, right? I'm not against, if I have a cause that I feel strongly about, I should be allowed to go and protest. I should be allowed to go and demonstrate in favor of this cause. And so if they feel strongly about that cause, they should be able to go and do that. And the church, I feel, did a really good job of saying, go, knock it out. Like, if this is how you need to engage with us, then please do, right? We're not going to say, don't come. We're not going to say, don't do that thing. We're going to say, here's the space for you guys. But let us carry on our activities until we deem it appropriate to change what we're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of supporters of Ordained Women are pretty...
they're not happy about it.
Yeah, they're pretty offended by the whole thing. It's not just that. It's all the way, they also say, you know, like, women in the church by a very large majority do not share your advocacy and consider that to be extreme. The letter in many ways does use...
I didn't feel like it was demeaning. Did you?
I didn't feel like it was totally demeaning, but it was carefully and smartly worded, so it was kind of slightly condescending, as if to denigrate the cause that they're fighting for, to... You know, to sweep it under the rug a bit more.
I could see that. I saw it as like putting it into perspective, right? Because a lot of media that's covering this is like, Mormon women want this. And they're like, hold on. We're at like 99% do not want this.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't Mormon women speaking. This is a small group. So keep that in mind.
And the interesting thing is they say that conversations have been held in recent years and continue to be held about the role of women in the church. And what I find interesting is, and this is one where I can't defend what I've seen, at least so far on the internet, of Ordained Women supporters. They're all saying, where are these conversations? Who says they're having these conversations? You know, for one, we don't know, because none of us are privy to being in the little meeting room where the 12 meets once a week to discuss serious issues in the church. They might very well, of course, and of course they talk about things. I mean, I guarantee a year ago...
They want C-SPAN for Jesus.
Exactly. When a woman first prayed in...
That's the title of this week's show, Jeff. We got it.
Oh, that's a good
C-SPAN
one.
C-SPAN for Jesus.
Okay. We'll see. C-SPAN for Jesus. But I'm going to write that down so I don't forget. But of course we don't know those things. But like, look, women praying in conference. Do you think that happened just because it up and happened? No, of course the brethren were aware of what was going on and they thought about it. And something changed. And they're hoping, of course, that the same thing will happen. And I think it's frustrating because many people view the church's PR department is now like the mouthpiece and the ones who carry a lot of weight. This is what I've picked up on from
that. That's interesting. That is interesting.
Like they, I think they feel
Quentin's
like
Quentin's quandary. Where's Quentin's blog about
exactly,
this?
Exactly. I do feel, and that's one thing. I think the brethren perhaps have yet to themselves issue anything because they don't want to. Let's face it, legitimize it, especially what they view as a very minority issue. But I think that's one thing ordained women wants is if they're going to get a no answer, I'm assuming they want it to actually come in a letter from the first presidency directed to the founders of ordained women, not letters from Jessica Moody, some junior.
With that being said, I have to agree with the position the church is taking of, like, if they responded to every movement that had 300 people, right? I mean, it's not fair to the other issues and things that are on the plate.
Also, there's a capacity issue.
Running this church.
Because if ordained women were actually to get the 500 people they say they'll have this time instead of 100 6 months ago, 500 women sort of storming Temple Square in that sense is, I mean, that's almost like fire hazard territory as well, when you're really thinking about it.
Will there be riot police there for these Mormon
Yeah,
moments?
We'll call the Burkut people in Ukraine, bring them over. They're unemployed now, so... It'll be great.
They are an employee.
Great.
All right, let's move on. So we got, let's see, LDS.org released another article on citizenship.
Citizenship.
This time. Pretty much a recap of what is it? Doctrine and Covenants 101? What's the one on the Constitution there? It's just like, love your country, be good.
134?
Involve yourself, go vote, be informed. I mean, stuff that they've already said, it's not novel, but again, I like that they're still releasing articles on topics just to give clarity to, like, if you're curious about what the church's stance is on X, they're putting that out there. So good for them.
Yeah. The funny thing that made me think of this when I saw citizenship, though, this a little bit goes back to Ukraine. I've found that even Russian members of the church, there's no other way for me to say it, they're insane. With everything that's going on right now, okay. I had a Russian, an active in the church, good Russian friend, who totally supports what Putin has been doing, and used the pretense, or basically what it says in the Articles of Faith, that we believe in being subject to rulers and magistrates. So therefore, she's all about what's going on in Ukraine, which was a totally different way of looking at things. I was like, wait a second. I understand if there are different countries at play here and there's different allegiances and all that, but you're quoting the Articles of Faith and saying, obviously, I support the boss with what's happening. It was a very different way of looking at the situation. And I've actually seen that from many LDS Russians, not to single all of you out. You're all great people and it's fine.
Well, it's a hard place to be, right?
Very strange.
Like, I think you and I had talked about when, I'd read Garden of the Beasts written by Eric Larson a little while ago. It was sort of a nonfiction account of Ambassador Dodd, who was from America over in Germany as Hitler was coming into power and all that stuff. And I remember thinking at some points in that book, as we read through it, like, what, I mean, these good people that are just doing what they're told, at what point do you say, no, this is too far? Because very often, I mean, like Russians right now, right? They're still like, no, the story Putin's selling us and the story on TV and everything is that, you know, they are, the Russians in Crimea are being oppressed and they need help and we're going to go and help them. Like, this is a good thing. We feel good about this. And they've got our naval base and gas and all that stuff down there. We need that back. That's something we need, right? It's easy to get behind it, even though, like, from other perspectives, like, he's clearly not a freedom fighter. He's a tyrant.
And as members of the church, we openly support freedom for people. We talk about, you know, to think as they may and worship as they may. And, yeah, so it's – that's that fine line.
One man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist, right? Yeah. How do we do that, especially with the church as a global piece?
Yeah.
Do they write a letter to the saints in Russia and say, just so you know, this is what is actually happening, and this is how you need to
No, they don't, because then the church gets kicked out of Russia, and it's over, you know? So you got to play it.
That's a really interesting angle.
Neither did I. It was a strange exchange. Some other quick things here. Let's see. Let's make our way out. LDS Church, of course. It eventually bowed to the church's pressure to keep the liquor laws.
No. Utah State. The state of Utah.
Sorry. Yeah, the church. The church is keeping its liquor laws the same, everybody. The church is not going to change.
They bowed
to it. You still can't drink with the word of wisdom. Anyways, but Utah lawmakers are not going to more liberalize Utah's laws, and they're going to keep up what many who love the booze call the Zion Curtain. So there's even a picture attached that shows the odd frosted glass barrier at a bar so that people can't see drinks being made, because that's part of the law in Utah, I guess. But anyway, the church put out a little mini campaign there to kind of whip people into shape, and it got what it wanted. I still don't love that.
There you go.
I still don't love its involvement in it, but that's life. There you go.
They mobilized. Let's see. We got the Goblin Toppers. You remember the guys that pushed over the rock at the Goblin National Park down in southern Utah?
Didn't they open for Mother Boy?
The Scout Troop down there. So they ended up getting a year of probation. Are very sorry that they got in trouble.
Exactly.
The video clearly shows that they were not sorry about destroying this great archaeological masterpiece, but rather they are sorry that they are on probation.
It's the classic letter. It's like the lesson on sin. They're just sorry they got caught. Not
probation. Probation is, well, and also they have to pay the fines to put up a bunch of signs that say "Do not touch the rocks."
I know. And so now,
do not push the rocks.
And so now they have to pay fines so that they're the. It's like anything else. The couple of fools who do something absurdly dumb that none of us would have done, now there's a rule about it, and a sign will be put up.
And that's why you should always leave a note.
Exactly. Another quick one. Fort Lauderdale Temple open house tickets should be available to you now. So if you are in South Florida or feel like going to South Florida, they were available as of the 17th of March. And if you want to go check that out, it's going to happen. They're going to have the open house starting on March 29th through April 19th. So go check out your new temple, Florida. It took you long enough to get a second one. Gosh. Missouri got two temples faster.
The church has opened a European Union office now in Brussels.
We have a Europe?
Yeah, mainly for so the premise is Jason Bourne was actually a Mormon, and had they had an office over there, we could have escaped this whole fiasco with the fourth movie where that really bad actor did Bourne. It's just a mistake. There's now an office in Brussels where I'm assuming they're just going to lobby the EU. That's kind of the purpose.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I'm guessing based on this picture of the office, their actual office is just that room. That's all they have. We have opened an office. Elder Christofferson standing there, and he gave the junior assistant to the EU commissioner the classic picture of a mom with a kid, and the dad's like, "Walk to me." And they're like, "You'll love this, German lady. Take it and think of us." Never mind President Hinckley gave the King and Queen of Spain a Christus statue when they did a temple there. You enjoy the statue of parents.
Never mind
Make
that.
Make the magic happen. Bring the magic home. Oh, also... Also, another quick update here. As of this recording, the President Monson case in the UK that we talked about was thrown out. It's over.
Why? Was it an abuse of the courts?
Pretty much. The judge did not seem that it held much water, and basically said, like, you are abusing the courts to pursue a personal agenda in order to try to, you know, humiliate or sue a church. When this is, he basically said, like, these aren't even the grounds for it. And I like that his main point was that you can't prove whether what he's saying is true or not. Like, there's no way for anyone to prove, legally speaking, if Joseph Smith saw God the Father and Jesus Christ. That is unprovable in a court of law. It's also, you can't disprove it in a court of law. So he's just basically said there's no legal grounds for this, and just chucked it right out. So don't worry, folks. President Monson's not going to jail. He's not going to run the church in exile like John Taylor did right before he died. John Taylor fled. So sad.
That's a great part of church history.
It's a great part when the prophet had to go in exile. I loved it too. That's one.
They ran. They were to the trees. Let's see. Mormons in the Amazing Race. Jeff,
I love them.
There are Mormons.
There's the father-son.
Oh, are you watching it? I'm boycotting it still until we get what we want.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Namely, we want to be on.
Yeah, we had a listener say, hey, why aren't you guys talking about them? We said, well, we did last year when they were on. But Dave and Connor, who were on it last year, he's the guy who ruptured his Achilles, and they kept going until they had to quit because he just couldn't do it anymore. They are running the race. They're doing well. But I have been watching it. Last week was funny because it was the first time they've ever actually said they're Mormons, like, on the camera. Yeah. That might be the first time it's ever even been said on The Amazing Race.
What did they say?
Well, the task was they were in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and they had to do a drink mixing, pouring thing at a bar. And the dad just like, he's like, well, the other task involves rhythm and I don't have any, but, you know, we're Mormons from Salt Lake City who have never drunk in our lives, so this ought to be fun. And they're just laughing. And then you see him at the bar.
Did they win?
You see him at the bar looking at the other guys. They're like, we're Mormons. We don't even know what this stuff is. It was great.
That's actually funny.
It was funny. It was good.
Let's see. Another one making the rounds right now. There's from August of last year, there was a lawsuit brought over in the UK where a gay couple is suing the Baptist church conglomerate to try and make them allow them to be married in their local chapel. And this is resurging again as the lawsuit continues. So you'll see a lot of that on Facebook and stuff. But it's one of those one of those things that everybody said, no, this will never happen, blah, blah, blah. It's not happened yet. Like, nothing's changed, but we can expect that sort of the anti-discrimination stance will force a lot of these laws to change, and which may change the way that that our temples and things of that nature are classified.
Well, we
within the church. I mean, like, only time will tell, right? But it's coming. I mean, it's happening. So, like, just keep an eye on it. You know,
there we go.
Another interesting development.
Another article, because Al says I love Rational Faith so much. Apparently,
this is the stupidest article.
There's a double standard in modesty at BYU because the men had their football show off day and they're all buff and
pro day where the NFL scouts come
and they're all sexy without their shirts with the running and the sweating and the pectoral muscles.
Jeff, if you're on the swim team, the BYU does not make you keep a shirt
on. One of these guys looks like Zangief from Street Fighter.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
So
the stupid article by Carrie Marsh, you goober. She's like, oh no, they got to have their shirts off. Well, guess what? If you're on the soccer team, nobody cares if you're practicing in a sports bra, right? Like, it's not the end of the world. You're playing your sport.
But don't they at BYU?
Volleyball players wear very short, tight shorts and like. Soccer players wear short shorts. I mean, there's nothing.
But
so if you have a problem with the modesty standard in sports, have it with the overall modesty standard in sports.
But I submit to you, football players don't run around shirtless. They wear padding and things.
They do when they practice.
By that logic, I should be able to do whatever I want when I practice. Baseball players don't run around shirtless. You know why? Because it's a real
sport. Garments are not, they're not necessary for sports, sex, and
I forgot.
Some other swimming. S. There's three S's
it's
and
swimming.
Three. I don't
it's
remember.
Swimming. Swimming is the other
swimming.
One.
Swimming. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like, if the garments aren't there, neither are the lines. I mean, just go all out.
Oh, whatever. I think.
I think this is just completely stupid.
It is not. The women, if
America,
if the women
well.
Are wearing the sports bras,
Carrie Marsh, I judge
and
you.
And the boobs
I judge you
are
as
bouncing,
a weenie.
The bouncing boobs at BYU, the people can't handle that. It's like you can't wear.
You know exactly what happened. Somebody was like, well, we need somebody to write an article on a bunch of shirtless hot guys. And she was like, let me take that one. I'm going to follow my sword for this one. I got it, guys.
I'll go attend and see what happens.
Hey, we got a problem with the lingerie section of the website. Guys, let me fix that one. I'm going to fix the lingerie section. That's for me. Yeah. Let me get this.
Well, whatever.
Anyway, Jeff.
Fine.
A delightful week, my
friend.
Yeah,
we don't... Sure. You don't want to talk about how Mormons invented Gore-Tex? I guess we don't have to.
I do not care.
But they invented Gore-Tex, and LDS living is a marvel.
I really don't care.
They also invented firearms. So you can thank Mormons for the...
Jonathan Browning.
You can thank Mormons for the war economy. Thank you, Mormons. Done a good job.
Jonathan Browning. invented the way for us to defend ourselves with a long rifle, a repeating rifle.
To defend yourself against an oppressive government that is guaranteed to storm militias in your home and rise up against you.
Have you ever seen Joe Biden? He's scary.
No, but I've seen The Hunger Games. If there's ever a movie that made me realize the Second Amendment is legit, it was The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
President Rose slash President Biden.
I feel like now I need to own more than a gun, let alone many guns, to necessitate an entire rack.
Done. All right. Well, as always, you can find us. Send us a note. We love to talk to you. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com or visit our website, thisweekinmormons.com.
Go to those places. Also, find us on Instagram at This Week in Mormons. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. And listen to our other podcasts, Sunday School Bonanza, really deep into gospel doctrine. Lots of good stuff's happening there. Keep your
it's doing great, man.
Keep your eye out for Third Hour of Power, which we do with This Mormon Life and apparently with the guys at Norman's sometimes when we're able now. Lots of good things are happening. And we hope if you are not subscribed to this podcast or our other podcasts that you will please take the time to do so if you're hearing this. This is like our pledge drive. We don't ask for money. We just ask you to hit the subscribe button. Think of the value
all right.
that we give you. Yay. That's all.
It's good stuff.
So be right. well.
Jeff, have a great week, man.
Thank you. I'll have a great week. It's Thursday. Yeah.
All right. A great 4 days.
I'll have a great weekend. Very good. All right. Good morrow.
A great weekend.
Good morrow, good sir. Fare thee well, everyone. Thank you for twimming with us. We will speak to you another day.
All right. Hey, see you later, buddy.
It's not the altitude that takes my breath away and makes my body think the air's too thin. It's not the bourbon you've been drinking, burns like autumn leaves against my skin. It's just you night, and the music you heard in me somehow. It's just you night, and I swear. It's not a fable that gives meaning to the language my heart speaks to you. It's not
you
a
ready?
Romance
yeah, I'm all set. Let's hit it.
That
in,
tells
in
me
three,
I come home
two,
lying
one.
Here.